Welcome to the Our Stories podcast, where we explore the lives of healthcare providers as a part of our wellness program with the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology at Emory University. I'm Caroline Peacock, Vice Chair of Wellness and Manager of Spiritual Health at Winship Cancer Institute. And today I'm delighted to have with me Dr. Jane Lowe Mizell, who is Assistant Professor in the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology, and she also has a secondary appointment in the Department of Gynecology and Obstetrics. Dr. Mizell is passionate about women's health, and she specializes in treating patients with breast and gynecologic malignancies. Dr. Mizell, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'd like to start by inviting you to share a little bit about what led you into the field of medicine. Do you remember from your childhood imagining that you would be doing the work you're doing now?
You know, I think my interest in medicine and my interest in women's cancers in particular kind of was something that evolved over time. Mm-hmm. I grew up here in Atlanta, actually. My parents were both attorneys and loved their work, but were also really good role models for me in the sense that they balanced work and family well, seemed to enjoy what they did at home and at work, but also really didn't pressure me or my brother to do what they did or to do any one thing, but really kind of wanted us to find what we loved. And for me, the love of medicine actually started in the summer after my freshman year of high school when we were tasked with doing a volunteer project. We had to volunteer for 60 hours a week mm-hmm. or 60, sorry, not 60 hours a week. We had to volunteer for 60 hours over the summer doing anything. And my math teacher recommended that I volunteer at Eggleston. She thought that I would be good with kids and might enjoy exposure to medicine. And I'd never really thought about that before, coming from a non-medical family. So I applied for the volunteer program at Eggleston, which I think still exists. That was back in 1996, but I think there now.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And I came back to school the following year, really thinking about, what would it be like if I focused more on science and what about a career in medicine? And the headmaster of my school at that time, who was also kind of very forward thinking, said, if you liked Eggleston, why don't you think about Grady? Grady, things are busy down there. You could have a lot of responsibility as a young person. Let's see if we can get you involved at Grady next summer. And so I was able to secure a volunteer position there the following summer, actually interviewing patients in the emergency room for a study that was being done about loss of access to prescription drugs. And it was amazing to me how many people ended up in the emergency room because they couldn't afford their medications. As a 15-year-old without much exposure to medicine, again, it was just very eye-opening to me. And I think that summer in particular, and then the few summers after that that I also spent at Grady, then working, were, I think, enlightened me to the possibility that medicine was a field where I could really use my brain, really think about science, but also like tap into my emotional side, because being there for patients in that way really meant a lot to me. And I liked the idea of kind of using my intellectual and emotional side every day.
That is so neat. So literally from across the street where you work right now, that's where you did your volunteer work when you were a teenager.
Yeah. I still have my volunteer t-shirt. It's very fun.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like when you see now volunteers here at Winship or in the hospital, does that change does your experience change the way you interact with them?
It does. I think it does in the sense that I get, coming back to Atlanta, because I was away from Atlanta for 15 years for school and training and then came back to Emory for my first faculty job. But now being back literally in my home neighborhood, practicing medicine, caring for patients, it does mean a lot to me. When I see volunteers come through either, downstairs in our lab or when I'm across the street at Eggleston getting my coffee, I do think back, to 25 years ago and how things changed for me when I started doing that.
And some of those people that you see volunteering now, they're going to have futures like you where they're maybe here practicing medicine. Who knows?
Oh, absolutely. No, I think those experiences change you.
And it sounds like the fact that your parents were very open in terms of allowing you and your brother to pursue the particular things that you were interested in, that gave you the space that you needed to develop your interests. And I wonder where in your training, either in medical school or residency, when did you start to feel drawn to women's health in particular, and what led you in that direction?
I think a lot of it is sort of chance and who you meet. I went to college at Harvard and stayed there for medical school. And during my fourth year of medical school, I did an elective at Dana-Farber, in part just because I had, you know, seen cancer patients over the course of my third-year rotations and, you know, kind of felt drawn to their stories. But then it was during that fourth-year rotation that I met some of the medical oncologists who worked with breast cancer specifically. And I think sometimes when you find a mentor who you just click with and who you sort of look at their life and you think, you know, I could be like that. I want to be like that. It sort of draws you more to the field. So I developed an interest in women's health and women's cancers then. And then I did my residency at Brigham and Women's Hospital, also in Boston. And my primary care clinic was actually a women's health clinic, kind of by chance. They just sort of placed me there, but I loved it. And there, you know, I wasn't obviously dealing with women's cancers as a resident. I was doing more kind of internal medicine. But breast cancer is common, and a lot of the, you know, menopausal side effects and things that women deal with are common. And I found that it was, you know, it was very easy to sort of see each patient as like, that could be me or that could be my mother. Kind of personalizing people's experience, I think, made me more empathic and made me sort of, I think, just put that much more heart into my work. And I loved that. I think, you know, for me, looking back, you know, residency, it was kind of a unique time. You're young, you're motivated. So much of you is going into what you're doing and into your work. And I just, I loved being able to kind of put my all into that and fell in love with it.
That is so nice. And one of the things that you mentioned is how, you know, sometimes it's chance in terms of mentors that you're exposed to and things like that. Can you remember some qualities that some of your mentors had that really impacted you in your learning?
That's a great question. I think, you know, two mentors come to mind. The first was Ann Partridge, who was a breast cancer physician at Dana-Farber. And she's focused specifically on young women with breast cancer, which I see a lot of now in my practice here at Emory and have done research with her since then as a faculty member here. So that's been great. But for me, it was sort of seeing how she operated in each patient room. She was able to go into each room, you know, and treat that patient as if they were the only person in her world. You know, really hear their story, really focus on what their needs were. And be able to sort of reassure them when they needed reassurance, give them direction when they needed direction, and help people come out with a real sense of where they were going and with more confidence. And I loved that about her. And then as a student, as a, you know, learner under her, she was able to explain things to me, answer my questions, send me relevant articles so I could do, you know, more reading in my own time and kind of get up to speed with where I needed to be to really fully function in her clinic as a clinician. And then, you know, as someone who, as I got to know her, she also shared with me elements of her personal life, which I try to do now with my learners also, because I feel like it's helpful for them, as it was helpful for me, to see especially women physicians functioning both as, you know, leaders in their field and compassionate physicians and excellent researchers, but also as mothers and wives if they choose to be that, and to have personal lives. And she sort of let me in on that. And I feel like I sort of learned a lot from her and sort of seeing how she lived her life. And similarly, when I got to fellowship, I did my fellowship in New York at Sloan Kettering and worked under Carol Agajanian, who's the head of their gynecologic medical oncology department. She was a wonderful mentor, had similar qualities in the clinic, and also just in seeing how she led the department with a sense of humor. You know, she was quiet but firm. She was a lot of things that, you know, I would aspire to be. So they were both excellent role models for me and remain close friends and colleagues.
That's really nice to hear. And as you describe the way the first person, you said Dr. Partridge, is that right? As you describe the way she, you got to see her work, for example, her helping patients to feel like they're the only people, you know, present in the world at the moment. In my role as a spiritual health clinician at Winship, when I get to meet with patients who happen to be patients of yours, a lot of times that's how they reflect on their experience with you.
Thank you.
That they feel very heard, very valued, that you're taking a great amount of time with them. So tell me a little bit about what, when you are going to meet with a patient, what values are you carrying? What is important to you in your practice with your patients?
Yeah, I think so many things go into that initial visit and to all the visits. But I would say the number one thing is humanity. You know, I think it's anyone can get cancer. Anyone can be diagnosed with cancer. You know, it crosses age, race, gender, all boundaries. So the way I sort of think about it is anyone in that chair could be anyone I know. You know, and the tables could turn at any minute. So I'm thinking to myself as I walk into those rooms, you know, what are these people feeling? Are they scared? Do they need direction? And how do they want to come out of here? And so I try to really listen and understand their story from them. and also get a sense of what they want. And there are a few questions I tend to ask, particularly at that initial visit, after I'm done taking my history and getting all the facts down about their past history and the present. I say, is there anything else I should know about you in order to take good care of you? And I find that asking that open-ended question kind of leaves it to them to sort of tell me what's on their mind. I get a variety of answers to that question. Some people tell me I'm really sensitive to all medications. I'm worried about what this is going to be like. And for someone who I'm thinking about, starting tamoxifen for stage one breast cancer, that clues me into thinking, they may be very scared of taking this pill and I need to explain, really why I'm recommending it, how we can manage side effects and kind of get them to understand and face that fear in a way that works for them. And then somebody else might say to me, I've got two kids at home and I really need to live for those kids. Mm-hmm. And so then we're thinking about, a stage three breast cancer. We want to be as aggressive as we can without over-treating. And, and then also thinking about offering resources for how do you speak to your children about your diagnosis and, what do you do for childcare during this and how do you ask for support from your loved ones? Mm. So that helps me help them, I think. And then also kind of giving reassurance that there's nothing that they did to cause this. I think cancer still has stigma in our community. There's so much out there about preventing cancer. I think people come in sometimes feeling like they've failed because they somehow haven't prevented it. Mm-hmm. But truly, it can happen to anyone. So I always try to take that away from them. Mm-hmm. And then also, reassuring them that my goal for their visit is for them to come out of here with a plan. Because I think everyone feels better when they have a clear plan to move forward with.
Sounds like you try to make a lot of space for them to share what their distress is in relation to their cancer diagnosis and to give them as much clarity as possible.
Yes. I think that's a great way of summarizing it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that they have such a caring and competent physician.
Thanks.
When you're caring for them.
I appreciate that.
I'm wondering a little bit about what the element of joy in your work. And the reason I'm asking this is because it can be a very hard field to be in, with working with people who are very ill. So tell me a little bit about how you find joy in your work in a very difficult field.
Yeah, I mean, I think, oncology is probably not the field for everyone. Mm-hmm. I feel lucky that it is the field for me and that I found it. I think, first and foremost, I do find joy in patient care. Mm-hmm. And that, if you didn't have that, it would be hard to do this. Mm-hmm. I think, yes, we are dealing with sick patients and we're walking people through tough times. But there's still a lot of joy. There's a lot of joy to be found in getting someone through tough treatment for breast cancer and then seeing a pathologic complete response at their time of surgery, meaning that they probably have a great prognosis, and celebrating that. Mm-hmm. Even with patients who have stage four disease, there's the joy of, celebrating a good scan and celebrating them responding well to treatment and tolerating treatment and making it to whatever milestone they thought they might not meet, like a child's second birthday or a daughter's wedding. So I think it's celebrating the little joys and being able to walk people honestly through the tough times that gives me a lot of meaning. And then I think, one of the real privileges of being at an academic center like this is that my work is varied. I'm not in clinic every single day. Mm-hmm. So I have time to do things like this. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of time to teach. And I really enjoy teaching medical students and residents and fellows, both about the science of oncology, but also about, kind of the spiritual side and how you take care of people and how you take care of yourself. And then getting to do clinical research, thinking about new drugs and drug combinations, both with colleagues here at Emory and then across the country and even the world, to try to make the field better and provide better options for people. So I think, for me, it's both the fact that I really do take a lot of joy in patient care, first and foremost, that keeps me going, but then also having a job where I get to combine education and research and, community activism along with taking care of people that makes it really a lot of fun.
You get to have a real varied workload in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's no day where I'm not absolutely looking forward to coming to work. And I think that's such a privilege.
Oh, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Because I know in the clinics, for example, you all are working very, very hard. So I'm curious about sort of in a regular clinic day when you have however many patients back to back and you've got notes and orders to put in and all kinds of stuff. What helps you stay positive during that time?
I mean, honestly, my patients are amazing. And I think knowing that I'm helping people and my patients are also very, they're grateful and they express that. And I feel lucky to have that. I think in medicine, there's an element of immediate gratification that keeps us going. Like we like to know we're helping people on a daily basis. And I feel like I absolutely get that. And then also, more deferred gratification, like working on longer term projects. But for me, every day in the clinic, the idea that I can make a difference in the lives of all the people that I'm seeing, either by providing reassurance, giving clarity with a new plan, anything like that is kind of what gets me through, and trying to stay organized and on top of it. You know, I think the type A person in me gets a certain amount of, you know, strange joy just from accomplishing it all at the end of a given day. Yeah. And then the other piece is my team. You know, I have amazing nurses, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants and pharmacists who I work with, who all make it really, really a pleasure, because everyone, you know, kind of in an ideal world, and really a lot of the time, is working to the top of their level. We're all taking care of people, and everyone's, you know, working together to make that happen.
Yeah, everyone's kind of doing their part to make the system run well.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's not always, you know, sunshine and roses, but we try to make the most of it. And it definitely, you know, at the end of every day, I feel grateful for what we've done.
It's wonderful. I'd like to ask a little bit about outside of work. You know, what helps you maintain your wellness, and what brings you joy?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I have children, a 7.5-year-old and a 5-year-old son who I love dearly, and a husband of now almost 12 years who's a pediatric surgeon over at CHOA. So that is kind of the bulk of my life outside of here. I also feel really fortunate to have my parents who still live a mile away from me, and that was a big part of the draw to move back to Atlanta, and my brother and sister-in-law and their son who recently moved back to Decatur. So my whole little world is right here, and those people are the people I love dearly. And I think, you know, it's interesting the kind of balance between being an oncologist and being a mom, and also being married to a surgeon. You know, I'm certainly doing a lot of the active parenting, you know, in terms of like getting breakfast on the table, making sure everyone's getting to school. Like a lot of that stuff falls on me in part just by choice. Like I really enjoy doing that stuff too. Like that morning routine means a lot to me, and our evening routines mean a lot to me. So I think in terms of maintaining balance, you know, part of what helps me is sort of the knowing, like, I need to get things done to the extent that I can to try to get home, because I want to spend the evenings with my kids, and that brings me a whole different kind of joy. You know, rambunctious energy, lots of love and kisses and reading books and fun. You know, and they will grow and change, and that will change. But for now, that brings me a lot of joy outside of medicine. And I think having that contrast and having my evenings be so different from my days kind of gives me the energy that I need, I think, to come back the next day and do what I do here, you know, with more energy.
It sounds like protecting that time, protecting that family time is really important, that evening time, that morning time.
Yeah. You know, what I often tell fellows, I've had a lot of conversations recently with residents and fellows who are new moms about, like, you know, how do you balance it all? And, of course, there's no one right way. Yeah. But I think one of the best ways that we can kind of maintain that for ourselves is by trying to have as much control over your life and your schedule as you can. And that doesn't mean doing less. It just means choosing what you do and when you do it to the extent that your job description allows.
Yeah.
And I feel like the times when I feel the happiest are the times when I'm able to, you know, to balance things in the way that I want them. You know, like, for example, on a day where I don't have patients to see, if I know 3 months in advance that there's, you know, an event at my kid's school that I'd like to volunteer at, I just, you know, take 2 hours out of my day and I go do that. And my kid loves it and I feel wonderful. And then if I need to do 2 hours of work after they go to bed that night, that's totally fine. But being able to allow myself that flexibility when it's possible within the workday, you know, and it doesn't happen often, but probably happens once every couple of months, you know, makes me feel really good. Just because I know it makes them feel really good and it's fun for me too.
Yeah.
So
I sometimes I say when I say no to something, I'm saying yes to something else.
Absolutely.
So yes to my children, yes to whatever, which is so important for the work-life balance.
Right. Yeah, and I always describe it as a pendulum too, because I think a lot of the time, you know, the pendulum swings. You might be working more and doing less at home when people need you less. Like, for example, my kids both play baseball and my husband's a coach, and I'm kind of not really needed when they're on the field. So on a Tuesday night when they both have practice, if I want to schedule patients at 5 o'clock, which I did yesterday to put on for next week, because I said to myself, no one really needs me at the field, I might as well see that additional new visit at 5 p.m. I can do that, you know.
Yeah.
But then there may be a day where they need me more and then I can be there, you know. So it's it's nice to be able to take that.
Kind of stay on top of the calendar.
Yes, definitely. I think it takes a lot of organization.
Yeah.
But, you know, multitasking, it's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. One last question I have is about your hopes for your future. Anything in particular that you'd like to share?
You know, I think it's so interesting. This is not directly answering that question, but I think I'll get to the answer by telling this anecdote. In Florida in January, I spoke at a conference about breast cancer, and I brought my family with me because it was at a fun hotel, and, you know, they stayed and played while I spoke. And I was going back and forth to give talks, and then would meet them at the pool for an hour and then go give another talk. And my 7-year-old said to me, you know, Mom, I want to go see one of your talks. I've never seen you speak on stage, and I want to see what that's like. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, Jackie, you can do that. But the thing is, you know, if you want to come, I'm going to be on stage. So if you decide you want to go back to the pool, I can't just take you back there. Like, you'll have to stay. But I'd love to have you. He was like, no, I really want to. So he came up to the room with me and put on his little plaid button-down shirt and his khakis and came to the talk and sat in the front row. And he watched. It was about an hour and a half panel discussion. Then I gave kind of went through a bunch of slides about a specific topic in breast cancer. And he watched with rapt attention. And then about probably 50 minutes into the session, started writing notes on one of the little hotel pads of paper. And then he came up at the end after everyone, you know, after it finished, he came up along with other people who had questions, waited his turn. And then when people finished asking me questions, he presented me with this little pile of notes. And one said, Dear Jane, I love the conference. Thank you so much for bringing me to this conference. Love, Jack. Oh, and then there were several others. They were so sweet, and wow. I saved every single one. But being able to share that with him meant a lot to me. And so I think, you know, in terms of hopes for my future, I hope from a work standpoint that I'm able to keep doing what I'm doing, mm-hmm. stay passionate about it, but stay true to my patients and to the values that brought me to medicine in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then for my children and my family, that I'm able to sort of share that joy with them, mm-hmm. But maintain the space so that they know how important they are in my life. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? That, like, you know, that work is important, but they are important. Mm-hmm. And to inspire them to do what they love, the same way my parents, you know, kind of inspired me to, you know, don't just do what I do, but find what you love and do it. And that, you know, that we remain as close as we are.
Wow. Well, I am so grateful to hear that story today. So thank you so much for your willingness to share. And I wish you well in all of your work.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me today.